Ah, you're going to love this show. My friend Chad Bruckner stopped by the show. He's a business owner, very successful business owner, retired law enforcement officer, distinguished career. He's a veteran of the Army, HUA, and he's a mental health advocate. This is such a great show. We cover a lot of different topics in this episode, everything from mental health to the importance of balance with family and work. Chad Bruckner, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the CJ Evolution Podcast. Top rank because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for tuning in. We sure do appreciate it. If you're not subscribed to the show, please do so and give us that 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcast. A big shout out to our brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, remember this. You are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the fantastic work. Our show today is brought to you by Viking Law Enforcement Consulting, LLC. Viking offers assistance to law enforcement agencies and clients, including best practices, technology optimization, forensics, and case reviews. Viking also helps companies bid for government contracts. If this sounds interesting to you, reach out to Viking today at www.vikinglec.com. That's www.vikinglec.com to schedule your free 15-minute phone consultation. On to the show with Chad Bruckner. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my friend Chad Bruckner on the show. We had some conflicts in scheduling, but he's here now, and he is just an amazing individual. Chad, are you there, brother?
I'm here, brother. How you doing?
Well, I am doing good, man. We spent a little bit of time talking beforehand, and I'm doing good, going through some stuff like everybody does, but I'm just happy you're here, brother. And can you tell the audience who doesn't know who Chad is, can you tell us a little bit about your background, brother?
Absolutely, brother. First, thanks for having me. This is great. And I'm finally glad that we got to catch up. I'm a believer things happen for a reason. So better late than never. Here we are.
Exactly.
Yeah. So my story is, I always think it's nothing unique or exceptional. My wife would argue with me, but 40 years old, I was from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I graduated high school at 17, went right in the Army, had no idea what I was going to do. No inclination. Grades were horrible. The only option I really had was to go in the military. So I went in the Army, did the Army infantry for 8 years. Yeah. Yeah. I know you're infantry, right?
I was 82nd. Yeah.
82nd. So. Yeah. Yeah. I was a dirty leg. So we just, but did that for 8 years. Got out of 25. Got a funny story about that too. And I'll tell you, but I got out, not married, no girlfriend, no kids, 25 years old, really feeling like, you know, I got to get my life going. Proud of my service. Don't get me wrong, but you know, coming out of 25, when I went in at 17, my friends were married, starting to have families, had careers. I had no education, no marriage. I had none of that. So, but came back in the summer of 06, I just got back from Iraq and met my wife, Kristen, who's a school teacher, and changed everything. Just saved me, put me on a path of direction and fulfillment. And, I knew after the first date, that I love this girl. I didn't tell her that, but I said, after the first date, I said in my head, I said, I love this girl. And by the third date, I told her I'm going to marry you. She was like, no way. That's crazy. She's Portuguese, Catholic, you know, did everything right. I met her. She had her own house, had a master's degree.
Wow.
You know, had a perfect life at 25 and was a teacher already full-time. I had none of that. And, so she really set me up for direction. So proposed to her after 6 months, knew that I want to marry her. But then it made me start to realize I got to get my life together. So I started thinking about what can I do? And my mother, you know, ever since I got out of the military, she told me, even when I was still in, you should become a police officer. And I never wanted to do it. I always just refused to. I didn't have any police officer mentors. I didn't know any police officers. So my only experience with police were growing up in the town I grew up outside of Philadelphia and, you know, getting pulled over for speeding occasionally. And, you know, my perception of law enforcement was, you pretty much just write tickets all day. And because my perception was so limited, it's not what I wanted to do. Interestingly, going back to my last, my eighth and final year in the military, I was in Iraq and we're in the Sunni triangle in the north end, and we were doing, as infantry does, movement to contact operations. And a lot of the operations we're doing in the urban environment are very para law enforcement. So that gave me the fuel when I was there. I said, you know what, this job we're doing over here is pretty meaningful. It's pretty impactful to the residents and the citizens that are worried about their physical safety, and very much reminded me probably what law enforcement should do and what does do. So when I came home and met my wife, put me on this path and said, you know, let me explore this. So went down that road, and I fell in love with being in law enforcement, being a cop. Mm-hmm. It was just the greatest thing that opened up so many doors to me, and meeting people, developing healthy, meaningful relationships, learning skills, providing a very important service to the community. So I fell in love with it.
Yeah. And well, thank you for your service, Chad, and the Army, and as a law enforcement officer. And you were very versatile. You wore many different hats in law enforcement: detective, undercover, background investigator. I mean, you did all of it.
Yeah, I was blessed. I was blessed to work at a great agency that really promoted merit, promoted whoever's working the hardest and doing the best is going to get the opportunities at that time. So I was fortunate. You know, timing is everything in life, and good and bad. So I was fortunate when I came in. I was only on the street for about 3.5 years when I got an opportunity to get detective and go back and start working some bigger cases, some cases I really loved, and started working narcotics undercover, my partner Nick and I, and we just had a great time. And at that time I worked there, we had a big drug problem in our town that I worked in. So to go in that community and be in the bars and be in the streets making undercover drug buys, arresting drug dealers, and seeing people literally clap their hands, neighbors and residents, when you're leaving a search warrant with two people in custody. I mean, you can't get any better than that.
Yeah. Now, you were in law enforcement a long time. Now, I ask every Leo who comes on here, a former Leo, and this is probably a broad question, Jeb, and I'm going to ask you anyway. I mean, there's so many problems in law enforcement. What do you think some of the biggest issues facing law enforcement going into the future are going to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think training's one of them. Personally, and this is a very broad, but I have this is something we could talk about for a while. I really believe police leadership is the fundamental problem right now, in my opinion.
I agree.
I know some phenomenal leaders in law enforcement, phenomenal, but I also know just as many that aren't, and make the job more about themselves than the men and women they lead and the community they serve. So I really believe to get to a point where the majority, which I love law enforcement, I think the majority of police officers are phenomenally great to do a good job. But like parents, and I preach this to my kids, a parent is a job 24/7, 365. We don't take weekends off. We don't take nights off. I have to be a father. My wife has to be a mother. And we do as best we can. We make mistakes, but we're active. We're involved. And we're setting those examples and leading by example. So police leadership to me is the same thing. We can't take time off. Our leaders have to be active, have to be involved, have to be mentoring our younger officers and really setting up the next generation.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, I think, badly, and this is not an indictment on every leader out there. So if you're a listener and you're a leader, if you have rank, I should have prefaced by saying you don't have to be a leader and have rank. I think some of the best officers I ever worked for never had any rank. But I agree 100%. And it amazes me, Chad, in this time and age that we're in right now, where attrition rates are through the roof, where people aren't coming into law enforcement like they did when you and I did. It amazes me that there's still that mindset or that culture of bad leadership out there when, we need to make some serious changes in order to replenish the ranks, establish a good culture. But it seems like just a hamster wheel with some of these agencies.
Oh, absolutely. And, the smaller agencies really struggle with that the most. Well, I guess every agency does, but, lacking resources and training and, I think really make some of these small agencies struggle. I worked in Pennsylvania, which I believe is the second or third most state that has the most municipalities in the country. Mm-hmm. There's only over 2,500 municipalities in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, those big cities. And then there's just countless 2-3-4 man departments. And we need more uniformity, more structure. And I think we can do that through better designation and promotion of police executives and leaders, and then that trickles down. I really believe that.
Yeah, I believe that too, my friend. Now, so you get out of law enforcement. What was the next step?
Well, that wasn't a plan of mine. I when I was in law enforcement, I got my bachelor's and I kept going. I got my master's, and I really felt that the future was set up nice for him to get promoted and keep advancing to the ranks. But, you know, life has a funny way of working out, like that John Lennon song, life is mm-hmm. what happens when you're busy making plans, that lyric. But it's true. You know, life has its own idea for what you should do and what you should be doing. So I had three kids, was everything was going well. Started to go through a little poor mental health on the job. I really think the job started to affect me. Mm-hmm. Probably around year 11, about 2018, I started to have some really struggles with sleeping. I didn't sleep more than 2 or 3, 4 hours a night for a year and a half straight. And working also shift work, mm-hmm. factoring that into weekends, holidays. I mean, you know, brother, doing that, if you don't get good sleep, you're not in a good spot for yourself, for your mm-hmm. wife, your kids, for your job, for your community. So that kind of was a slow material transition. And then it just got to a point where I woke up one day and had some factors in my job, my career as a police officer. I just looked around and wasn't really proud of the job I was doing and some of the people I was working with. So mm-hmm. I decided it was just time for a change. I always had a mind on the next thing, the new thing. My dad's an entrepreneur and a business owner, and it always had that influence that, you know, in business, there is no protections, there's no pensions, there's no guarantees. You're either going to work hard and make a good living for your family or you're going to fail. It's all based on, you know, relationships and hard work and the kind of service you provide. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I just had an opportunity, a gentleman that actually did my background, my police background for my police department. He did my background in 2007, and now he's in his 70s. He's a great guy. Bob is his name, former police chief, retired. He started this private investigation company. He was doing police background. So he was a private citizen, a licensed private investigator, doing police officer backgrounds for municipalities. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of guys and companies do that in this area. So he actually did my background for the police agency I worked in. So when I ran into him in 2020, we started having conversations. He said, "Hey, do you know anybody looking to buy? I'm looking to retire and sell the business." And it was just this organic thing that happened. I think our first meeting was 3 hours. Our second meeting was 4 hours. And we had to start having some great traction. And I think probably the third meeting, I came home and told my wife, "I think I'm going to retire from law enforcement and buy this company and go into business." So,
and she said,
She was great. Yeah, she was, absolutely. Yeah,
and I want to talk about family in a minute, but I want to, the importance of family, but I want to go back to mental health. You know, when you were struggling with challenges that you were dealing with, Chad, I mean, did you do anything, or did you just say, did you reach out for help? I mean, I don't know what your challenges were, but again, this resonates with a lot of listeners. A lot of people, as you know, first responders suffer with a variety of mental health challenges. Did you reach out to your agency or just say, "I just need to change the scenery"?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm fortunate because my father, and he wrote a book about this, so I'm not putting out any information that is private, but my father is very open about his experience, was a victim of childhood sexual and physical abuse. And this occurred his whole, starting from 4 years old all the way to he was 12. So I grew up in a household where we talked about mental health. My mm-hmm. father would hug and kiss me and tell me it's okay to cry when you're hurting or when you're sad, or tell yeah. somebody when you're having a bad day. So I am so lucky to have that upbringing, because when I started to experience those issues, similar issues as a grown man, it was a baseline I could fall back to. I know so many of my brothers and sisters that didn't have that maybe loving environment and didn't have those resources or tools or the baseline to fall back to. So it was easy for me because I grew up that way. So when I was hurting, and about 2018 started, I started having conversation with my wife, my father, mm-hmm. people in my inner circle that I'm really struggling, going through some tough times. And it was easy. So I was able to get into therapy and started to go biweekly and started to get back to a spot where I realized that I was hurting a lot more than I thought I was. Yeah. And evidenced by my drinking. I mean, I think every first responder can relate to the fact that, and I was just talking to a police officer friend of mine, that we make excuses for why we consume alcohol. I work a crazy job. I work shift work. I see a lot of bad stuff. It's normal to come home after 3 or 4 beers. I was always a social drinker. So I would drink at weddings, social events, weekends. I was drinking every night, heavily every night, mm-hmm. For a period of about a year in 2019, the end of 2019, into 2020. So it was just the snowball that kind of realized, look, I got to make some life changes. And when you go through that, at least for me, when I went through that, I started to prioritize what is important to me, what is not. What can I absolutely live without? What I cannot live without with? And it was clear that my family was the most important thing, and the job was secondary to that. And as much as I love serving the community, as much as I love being there all hours of the day for citizens and providing them with health and safety, it was clear that I had to leave and yeah. try something new. So,
yeah. Well, you are, you know, very unique in the fact, brother, and I know you know this, that you had, you know, you had a family, your parents and your dad that taught you to open up, because again, you know that a lot of first responders, I would say the majority don't have that. And that's what's hard to break through. It's hard to break through that storm and tell first responders or advise them to, you know, talk to somebody, talk to a trusted friend. I mean, talk to, you know, trusted resources. And well, you know, I mean, it's just very difficult because as first responders, I mean, I know in my experience, I mean, I kind of took the same path you did. I was in the Army, like, you know, went to the law enforcement. And when I was in the Army, I'm assuming, you know, I mean, even though I hate to assume, you know, I was just taught to suppress. Okay, you see a bunch of stuff, you just don't talk mm-hmm. about it. And then I carried over into law enforcement and a career in law enforcement where you just don't talk about stuff because, for one, you don't want to be ostracized. And two, you know, it's a sign of weakness. I'm not saying it's a sign of weakness, but a lot of people think it is.
Sure. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And I think that's some when I get back to the police leadership, the common theme I'd still, and law enforcement has made amazing strides. I mean, some of your guests you've had on, I listened to many of your shows and the industry has made such amazing strides with mental health and being more open and advocating for an inclusion environment, but there's still a long way to go. I mean, a lot of police executives still don't want to really embrace the fact that their officers are struggling or hurting. I think every agency right now in America and the world, law enforcement has somebody really going through a crisis or a tough time, but we just don't ask those questions. I think, and I try to be more charitable with our executives, I think they might not know how to ask that. That's a tough thing to really breach those conversations. And I try to be more charitable and not so judgmental, but maybe they just don't know how to bring those conversations up. But a lot of strides are being made right now, and I'm really happy about that because, like you said, not every police officer has that upbringing, that experience, and it can cripple their lives. They don't know what to do or where to turn, and you see the suicide rate be where it is, and yeah. it's heartbreaking. And
yeah.
that was kind of my motivation for getting on the critical incident stress management team in the county that I was operating out of north of Philadelphia, and I still do it now, and I just love it because we connect with so many first responders that are hurting, that are going through a crisis. And I was just texting a bunch of them yesterday, just checking in. Hey, brother, how you doing? Hey, how's everything going? And it feels so good to have that connection. Because I think we break down the barriers, we break down the walls, and we take the badge off our chest metaphorically, and we just connect heart to heart. We are all in the same boat. We all have desires and hopes and dreams and fears and insecurities. And taking all that stigma down and breaking through it allows us to really connect and form meaningful relationships.
Yeah. Now let's talk about, you mentioned family before, and you know, how you chose family, which I 100% agree with, you know, family over the job. I think a lot of first responders, they do the opposite. So how did you manage, and I don't like using work-life balance that much because I think there's always like an imbalance, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
How did you juggle that with maintaining, you know, the family life? Because that's one of the things, honestly, Chad, that I struggled with when I was a cop. I mean, I was signing up for every OT possible. I was always gone. And I suffered through that. I mean, not only I, but my family suffered through that. So how did you do it successfully?
Wow. And I'm going to give you a little disclosure here. If I get emotional on you, I'm just a sensitive and emotional guy. I like to cry and watch romantic comedy. So bear with me, because when I talk family, I always tend to get emotional because I'm just so proud of my wife, I'm proud of my kids, and not to say we're perfect. My wife and I argue and disagree like any other couple does, but they are, I'll get back to my childhood. My parents had some financial struggles growing up. So I'm the oldest of three kids, and we had to sell our house, had to move to a smaller house, had some bankruptcy issues and some financial issues. So, and I know a lot of people can relate to that. So in saying that, we didn't have a whole lot of physical stuff. But what I saw was my parents, especially my dad, who went through some serious trauma as a child, and it manifested in his adult life, which I witnessed some of those episodes, to watch my mom support him and love him, to watch them get in disagreements or arguments, stressing out over money, still always watching them come back to each other, laying in bed together, watching TV at the end of the night. That's what I saw growing up, and I feel very fortunate about that. So I knew one day I was going to get married and have a family. I remember being, this is going to sound a little strange, but I remember being 14, 15, thinking about, and I wasn't one of those like dreamers about like, you know, my wife dreamed about her day, perfect wedding. But I remember being 14 or 15 and having a conversation in my head that well, one day I'm going to get married. I'm going to pick a wife. I'm going to have kids. Where are we going to live at? Like, that's just the example I had growing up and some of the things I was thinking about. So fast forward to when I met my wife and absolutely married up. She's 10 times the human being I ever will be. And I think that is really what keeps me straight and balanced every day. There were some times when I was undercover, she would say to me, "Hey, babe, you're working a little too much. You're not spending enough time at home." And there was such a level of respect, even though I love my job and people that I worked with, like, "Man, you're really going after and working hard and doing drug buys at all hours of the night." But I respected my wife so much and knew that she wanted the best for me and our kids that it was actually pretty easy to say, "Okay, I appreciate you bringing that to my attention. Let me think about that. I'll come back to you." And I would come home that night, we'd have a conversation about it. So it was always kind of rooted in respect and listening to each other. Again, we have our moments like any other marriage and every other couple, but I recognized early in my life and then early in my marriage that I was only ever going to be happy without money. Means nothing to me. Status means nothing. Awards on your walls, degrees. None of that means anything if you don't have someone that you love to share it with. So that was always something that I'm blessed that was given to me at an early age.
That's amazing, brother. And I really like what you talked about with, you know, so many of us, and I'll put myself in this category, not so much now, but in the past, you know, you'd come back and, you know, my wife would say, "Well, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you working?" It was just how it is. And then I kind of shut down, you know, but it sounds like the point I'm trying to make is communication is key, not in, you know, a marriage, but any relationship. And it sounds like you and your wife had pretty good communication back and forth.
Yeah. We're lucky in that regard. And don't get me wrong. I'm a human being. So there are plenty of times I'm like, this is my career. This is my job. If I'm going to make it big, I have to do this. But, you know, all those, I think it's blind ambition. I think we're all guilty of it from time to time. We want something so bad that we're willing to sacrifice the values that mean the most to us to get it. And it takes somebody to hold you accountable. My wife and I are completely different. I mean, pretty different as far as our personalities, our interests, but the core values that, I mean, they are 100% in line.
That's what matters.
Yeah. And that's all that matters. Right. And I always think that's good when you have different interests and personalities, but you come back to your core values, and that's always what that keeps you rooted in your family and your strength.
So if a listener is out there, you know, thinking or contemplating starting a career in law enforcement, and I'm sure you've got this question before, Chad, I mean, what advice would you give somebody out there saying, you know, "I want to be a cop, you know, I want to get into law enforcement"? What would you tell them?
And I teach at the police academy, so I'm glad you asked this question because it comes up a lot. And I always ask the cadets in the first day of class that I'm teaching with them, "Why did you get it? Why are you here? What brought you here?" And I love hearing the different stories. Some, their parent was or family member was a police officer. Some, they're, you know, somebody in the community they respect. Some, they like the certain movies growing up that pushed them this way. Some want to make a difference. Some want to make a change. I mean, I love all the different stories. But the one thing I always tell them is that's all great. At the end of the day, if you're not willing to give 100%, it's not good for you. It's not good for your partners. Not good for your department. It's not good for your community. And that's okay. Look, I left after 13 years. There were some close to me that thought, "Hey, you keep going on this track, you'll be chief of police one day." I mean, people would tell me that. And guess what? After 13 years, I left. My heart wasn't in it anymore. And that's okay. So just make sure you're in it for the right reasons. Make sure you're 100% ready to go. Because the bad days are going to come. Unfortunately, this job, as you know, there are going to be bad days. You're going to see a fatal overdose. You're going to see maybe a juvenile suicide, fatal car crash. You're going to see trauma. You have to make sure you're rooted in this for the right reasons, because those are scars that you will carry with you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like you said, I mean, you're going to see a lot of bad stuff, and maybe stuff's not the proper word, but you're right. And, you know, I'm glad you have those conversations with the cadets, because you know, everybody gets in there bright-eyed, bushy-tail, and they're like, they want to go out and run and gun and stuff. But this job, Chad, damages a lot of people. I'm talking about law enforcement officers. I mean, over the long term, it will damage you. Now, I know what the listener might be thinking. You just are asking, why get into law enforcement? You're telling us it's going to, and you just have to keep an open mind and realize that when you start going through problems and start dealing with issues, which you will, you have to reach out and take that step forward and ask for help, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think intentions in life are everything, right? Intentions in marriage, intentions in friendship, intentions in career. What are your intentions? You know, I know what you want to do, and I know how you tell me you want to do it, but why are you doing it? What is your intention for what you're doing. And those are the conversations I like to have with the cadets to get their mind going of, I don't ever talk anybody out of doing. I think it's the most noble profession out there. The sacrifice that our law enforcement officers are making every single day. Most people in the community in this country have no idea some of the things are these officers are going through. So I think it's the most noblest of professions. Yeah. I just want them to start thinking early about things that are going to happen down the road and start having a baseline how you're going to respond to it.
Now in the academy, just out of curiosity, Chad, the one you teach at, is there a lot of emphasis on mental health? Or because I know here in Colorado there isn't. I mean, they're trying to change it through post requirements and things like that. They're trying to do a bigger block. But I mean, what does it look like where you're at?
Yeah, they've done a great job recently. I've been teaching the academy for 4 years, I believe now, and a couple of directors have been there, but both have done a great job. It's really made a lot of headway. There's a lot of mental health blocks. I was fortunate to be able to teach the director now, the academy added for this first class that's going on right now, actually added an 8-hour, they already teach mental health. They added another 8-hour block that I get to teach. So I'm really excited about that. They've done a great job. And I think the industry itself has lent to, especially with the media coverage, people start talking about these issues. So whether, you know, directors or municipalities are ready or not, they're kind of being forced, hey, we got to start dedicating a lot of training resources to mental health.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's circle back to Intercounty Investigations and Solutions, your business. Now, how can your business, brother, what can you do for a municipal government? I mean, how can you help them?
So I'm really passionate about this because as a detective, we did the pre-employment background investigations. And I'm going to get to your question as I circle with the background of it. But so doing the pre-employment background investigations, you know, from police officers, you come in and you get a list of who to do the backgrounds on. But as a detective, I might've had 20, 30 cases at that time, could have had a bunch of robberies, ag assaults, homicide, rapes, you know, whatever. So the background investigation part isn't the most glamorous, but it's the most important part of your job, I believe, vetting candidates and bringing on the best amongst us. And you can see everything going on in the media now, how important that is. So my experience was it wasn't given the most due care and the most due process to the importance of it. So when I left law enforcement, got into Intercounty Investigations, the former owner, this is something he put an emphasis on, is creating municipal background solutions for government. So we can come in and be a one-stop shop to handle all that, do the proper vetting, be thorough about it, have a uniform process, and really save our clients time and money. Because I know as a detective, when I had a background investigation to do, if it was priority, which they usually are, I would put my cases on hold and do that during the day and then stay over at night on overtime and work on my cases, or vice versa, work on cases during the day and stay at overtime on night to do the background. So It was still costing money. It was still costing time. You know, your resources weren't being utilized properly. So I got really passionate about this and going around and meeting with so many municipalities now, you know, to pitch these services of how beneficial they could be. There's problems out there. We're trying to solve those problems by bringing benefits to our clients. And so far, the reception has been overwhelming and amazing.
It's amazing, brother, doing such good work. Now, if people want to find what you're doing as far as your business, Chad, how can they reach out to you, brother?
That's great. Yeah, we have our website, Intercounty, I-N-T-E-R, County, I-S for Investigations and Solutions, intercountyis.com. Hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm out there at Chad M. Bruckner on LinkedIn. We have an Intercounty Investigations and Solutions LinkedIn page. And more than anything, we are just looking forward to connect and build relationships, because this issue that's going on in law enforcement, we see it playing out. And I think we're in the beginning stages of healing and getting past that. We're only going to get through that working together and building processes that are going to set up the next generation of law enforcement to be the absolute best they can be. And in the end, deliver the absolute best services to citizens in the community.
Well said, my friend, Chad Bruckner. You are the man, brother. I could talk with you all day. Thank you so much, brother, for coming on the show, sharing your insight, your experience. I love your entrepreneurial spirit. Again, I love what you're doing, brother. Thank you for your service in the military and in law enforcement, brother. And if you need anything, and I know you know this because we've talked a lot offline before, if you need anything from me, brother, please reach out to me. It was an honor having you on the show.
Patrick, thank you, my friend. It's been an honor for me. And one of the coolest things about me leaving law enforcement, getting into business, jumping on LinkedIn, which I never was on, I start interacting with people all around.
Yeah. I mean, LinkedIn is a great one of them, man. So great platform, LinkedIn. I love it.
It is, brother. And all the best to you.
All right, brother. I'll talk with you soon.
Sounds good, buddy. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.